But for right now, the next 2 hours, it's Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And as we start things off, we say good afternoon to Wyatt Berkover of Vogelzang Law. Wyatt, welcome to WGN, my friend.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You're a local guy, right?
Yep. I'm from Highland Park originally. I've spent all my time either in Chicago or the suburbs. So went to college at UIC, law school at Chicago Kent. So Chicago through and through.
Did you always know you wanted to be a lawyer?
I mean, I think when I was in elementary school, I probably thought I wanted to, like, you know, test drive race cars. But, you know, as I grew up, I always knew I wanted to help people. And I figured, you know, based on what I knew about myself, it seemed like law was probably one of the best avenues for me to actually be able to help people.
At which point in law school did you kind of determine what kind of law you wanted to do? Because there are so many different kinds.
There certainly are. It was pretty quick. I mean, you certainly get a sense for all the different types of law, like your first few months in law school. But I had always sort of gravitated towards personal injury, like I had said. So once I sort of learned more about the different types, I said, yeah, that's the one for me.
Do you just like helping people on some of their worst days and providing resolution and closure for some people? Is that what it drives you?
I mean, it's all about, in my mind, you can go to law school and you can make tons of money, but at the end of the day, if you can't sleep at night, what was the point? So I always wanted to go to law school with the purpose of helping people, because I knew that that was going to make me feel fulfilled in my life. It wasn't just about, you know, going after money. It's about making sure that people are being taken care of at the same time.
What year did you graduate law school?
That's a tough one. I think 2016. It's been a minute. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to give you a stumper.
Yeah, no problem.
I guess I was saying that you got to Vogelzang pretty quickly after law school, right?
Yeah, I started with Nick Vogelzang while I was in law school. I saw a job posting on our law school's job posting website. Mm-hmm. And I knew what asbestos was from some work that I had done when I was in college. And I thought, well, you know, I know what that is. And I think that might be an interesting way to sort of go about helping people. So I applied for the job, and it's been history ever since. So I've been there for 10 years.
That's a long time. Can't believe it's going fast.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, the people I work with and people I represent really, truly make it a pleasure to do. I mean, they're people that, you know, are going through sort of their worst day of their entire lives, but I'm able to sort of help them at least get, you know, as you said, some sense of closure or at least some recovery for the injury that they've sustained.
We have a lot of different firms that come on here. I love each and every one of them. A lot of them do personal injury law. And you guys really are hyper-focused on mesothelioma and some lung cancer cases,
right,
as it pertains to asbestos. I imagine that gives you the power to kind of know everything, the ins and outs about it, and do it well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I mean, because I've been able to focus on just sort of this one area of law for the past 10 years, you know, I feel like I am a bit of an encyclopedia when it comes to certain, you know, areas of the asbestos litigation, you know, certain products that had asbestos, and certainly certain areas. I mean, I look around where we're sitting right now, I see several buildings that I know were built using asbestos-containing materials, including that one right over there.
Oh, so really?
Yeah. Wow, I mean, yeah. The one we're sitting in might be as well. So, you know, there's a whole world that you don't really think about until you start looking into it. And it's the world that's going on when we're sitting here talking. It's the world that's creating power. It's the world that's making steel. All that's happening, these people are working around asbestos-containing products while that's happening. So, mm-hmm. You know, asbestos is quite literally everywhere. And the more I learn about it, the more I learn there is to know.
Yeah, you gave me a moment's pause thinking this building. And then I thought of how many listeners are sitting in homes that have asbestos. And this is not to get anyone's heart rate up.
Right.
For the most part, it sits there as long as it's undisturbed and it doesn't do any harm, right?
Correct. Yeah. If you're sitting in a house that was built in the 1940s or 1950s, you're probably not being exposed to asbestos as you sit there right now. It's when you're actually, you know, if there's pipe covering on a pipe that you are, you know, tearing it off, it's creating dust that you see with your own eyes. That's when we would consider that to be an asbestos exposure. But, you know, if you're walking over floor tile that has asbestos in it, there's probably not much asbestos dust being generated, if at all.
And most of the clients that you work with, unfortunately, who have developed mesothelioma or asbestosis or lung cancer, mm-hmm. It's through repeated exposure, usually at the workplace or maybe someone who's married to someone at the workplace.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, so a lot of the people that we represent, we represent a lot of the different building trades. For example, insulators, pipe fitters, boiler makers, sheet metal workers, drywallers, people that wound up working as mechanics. So it's all over the place. And then oil refinery workers, power plant workers, steel mill workers. There's miles and miles of pipe covering with asbestos in it still at lots of these job sites.
Actually, pause right there, because sure. That's always what blows my mind, is I feel like I've heard about asbestos my whole life in terms of us being aware of its dangers.
Right.
And I just was surprised to, when we hooked up with you guys at Vogel, saying that there was still so much litigation going through it. Number one, there's a long latency period before there's the development of what happens.
Right.
But I'm just surprised to find out that, yeah, of course, there's still asbestos in so many places. And it wasn't, like, actually federally banned in certain areas until recently. Like, right. Unfortunately, we're going to be dealing with asbestos cases for years to come, right?
That's absolutely true. Like I said, you know, with a steel mill, for example, if there's a piece of pipe that has asbestos pipe covering on it and it's not, they don't have to spend money to abate that pipe covering and to, you know, repair that pipe. They're not going to. So that pipe covering is going to remain there in place for as long as it possibly can. That means you have asbestos that was installed in the 30s, the 40s. We're talking World War II. And as long as it's, you know, salvageable, they're going to keep it there in place. So it all comes down to cost. Now, asbestos abatement costs a lot of money. So, you know, there's choices they have to make. A lot of times it gets left in place. And, you know, if you're a maintenance worker at one of these plants, yeah, everyone knows about asbestos right now, but you're also being told you got to do your job.
Right.
And so, you know, either you go home with food for your family that night or you don't. So,
right. Because it takes, what, 20, 30 years sometimes for the disease to show up in your lungs?
Yeah, mesothelioma is really insidious like that. Small exposures, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, I've had clients that were exposed for one summer when they were, you know, 18 years old, and then they develop mesothelioma when they're in their retirement age. You know, if they had known that that job was going to give them the terminal illness that they passed away from, they would have walked right out that door and they would have never taken that job. They would have gone, you know, to 7-Eleven or somewhere else to do a job that didn't involve asbestos. The tragedy is that very few people were warned of asbestos. The only people that really knew about the hazards were industry. They knew starting in the 1930s, and then for asbestosis, and then for lung cancer, they knew as early as 1955. Mesothelioma, they knew as early as 1963, but they kept putting the products out there.
And that's the crux of the whole argument. Some people might say, wow, you worked in the trades, you knew what you were up against. No, people didn't know what they were doing, but the key is that the people who put the asbestos there, or at least advised it to be put there, very well knew that it was bad for you.
Absolutely. And honestly, that's, you know, a lot of my clients are very uncomfortable with the concept of bringing a lawsuit. But when they start to learn about things like that, they, you know, when I talk to them, they say, well, I had no idea anything. You know, asbestos was just a word. And sometimes they didn't even know that word itself. So, you know, these exposures, they're continuing to this day.
Yeah, I think two things can be true at once. Maybe we are over a little overly litigious society sometimes. I don't think asbestos is that area. Tell you what, why don't we take a little break here? We got to know you a little bit, the broad strokes. If anyone has any questions, too, by the way, we always get some asbestos questions. 312-981-7200. If you've got one, we'll cover more ground next. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Talking about a serious subject and one that touches a lot of people. And like you were saying, I don't think some people even know that perhaps their lung cancer was caused by asbestos. Mesothelioma, on the other hand, we know that is related to asbestos. That's the only cause we know of mesothelioma, right?
Correct. The only known cause of mesothelioma is asbestos exposure. So when we're working with clients, if they have mesothelioma, we work backwards through their work history to determine where they could have been exposed to asbestos, because that's the most likely source of exposure. It's not always going to be, you know, personal use or at the house. It's usually occupational.
But for lung cancer, that there's other factors that obviously cause lung cancer. So it's a little bit more further conversation.
Of course. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. There's lots of people that don't know that lung cancer is associated with asbestos exposure. It's something that doesn't usually come up when you're diagnosed with lung cancer. But, you know, lung cancer is cancer that starts in the airways of the lung, and exposure to asbestos alone can cause lung cancer, but the effect is multiplied if they smoke cigarettes. So both things, you know, work together to actually cause lung cancer.
Cool. Are you cool taking a call and putting on the headphones? I know it's always weird to hear your own voice.
Yeah, no
and
problem.
Wyatt threw his own headphones off because he's like, I don't want to hear my own voice. But we want to hear from Janet. Janet, tell us your story.
Hi.
And what we can do.
Yes. My husband worked for a school district, and he developed lung cancer when he retired. While he was working, and I was a substitute teacher there too, they were removing asbestos, and they put just a small, they put a plastic drop cloth between, I think, the cafeteria and the and the room where it was, or the area where it was.
But it wasn't like hermetically sealed off in any real fashionable way. Just they put a cloth. Okay,
no, no. It was very open. And he developed lung cancer when he retired.
Mm.
He had lung cancer. He developed the lung cancer in 2014, and he died in 2021.
Oh, Janet, I'm sorry.
I also substituted 1 year at that school, and I mentioned to him, I said, Rod, I don't think that's a good, safe idea for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, well, you know, I guess it's under government control.
Right, we don't know exactly. We don't know exactly what's going on. Tell you what, Janet,
right.
I'm gonna ask our guest what he thinks about something like that, okay?
Yeah, Janet, that's actually, it hits close to home for me because how I even learned about asbestos litigation, what got me started on my path here was my first summer break from college. I worked as a summer laborer for a school district.
Really?
Yeah, in the suburbs, getting classrooms together for the school year. I was 19. I didn't know anything about asbestos.
Right.
But then one day, just as Janet's describing, these asbestos abatement workers walked in Tyvek suits and huge dust masks and started taping up the hallways with plastic tarp and putting up warning signs about asbestos. And I'm just standing there like, what's going on? Because
right.
I'm in, you know, shirt and shorts.
And you know it's a bad word. You've probably seen it by this point, right?
Of course. But, you know, just like everyone else, you had to keep working. So, you know, I will say, you know, the statute of limitations might have already passed on your husband's case. And it's a very unfortunate. I'm very sorry to hear about your situation. You know, there are potential remedies if the statute of limitation had not passed. We can, you know, again, this isn't legal advice, but theoretically, right. You can always try to sue the company that performed the abatement. You know, they're not necessarily, they can be held accountable.
Is it harder when it's a lung cancer case and not mesothelioma to provide that, prove that direct link?
No. I mean, so the other side will always say, no, that lung cancer was, and by the other side, I mean the defendants. So
right.
We're suing companies, and these companies get a chance to defend
Just
themselves.
Get a little closer to that mic.
Sure. They get a chance to defend themselves. And so, you know, they're always going to say, no, that lung cancer was caused by strictly cigarette smoking or some other factor that, you know, is unknown. You know,
right.
Diesel smoke can cause lung cancer as well. So, you know, we think the science is pretty clear on our side that lung cancer can be caused by asbestos exposure. If there's certain markings on the lung, such as scarring, that can certainly, you know, increase the odds that the lung cancer was caused by asbestos exposure.
But generally, what is the statute of limitations, especially after someone's passed away?
It's 2 years.
The date of the passing?
Yeah, date of death, 2 years for wrongful death. And for personal injury, it's 2 years from the date of injury. You know, if you're sitting here right now and you just now learned that lung cancer can cause, that asbestos exposure can cause lung cancer, you know, that can actually be the date that you learn.
I see.
It's called the discovery rule. So then there's 2 years from...
From discovery.
Right.
So it's not 2 years from the diagnosis of lung cancer. It's from when you find out that that could have been the case.
If it was mesothelioma, for example, since the only thing that is known to cause mesothelioma is asbestos exposure, that would be, we'd consider, you'd have 2 years to file your case. But mm-hmm. if, you know, you go, like I said before, if you go to the hospital, you're diagnosed with lung cancer, they only talk about cigarette smoking or they don't even mention different factors that cause your lung cancer. You might have no idea that asbestos can cause lung cancer.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Janet, thanks for the call. Sorry about the loss of your husband, okay?
There's nothing I can do about it.
You can always, it doesn't seem like it because of statute of limitations, but it never hurts to visit the website or give them a call. Janet.
Go
ahead. Just get out a piece of paper and pen. I'll say it a couple more times before he leaves. Don't worry, Janet. It's Vogel Zhang Law. That is VOGELZANG law.com. And Janet, maybe Iridian can pop on and make sure you got that website too as well. We start getting questions like this all the time. Why? Because so many people have been exposed. And it may not all end with everyone getting some winning case, but I think people just like to talk to you about it
right.
to at least get some guidance and some sense of, do I even have a case? And even if the answer is no, at least someone knows that, right?
Of course, absolutely. I'm always happy to talk to anyone about potential asbestos exposures, you know, however I can put people's mind at ease.
Yeah, for sure. And these are tough conversations to have with people. How does that conversation start? Is it similar to, you know, hey, tell us a little bit about the years in which you might have been exposed. Tell us where. What sort of questions are you asking?
Yeah, so when I meet a client, you know, the first thing I really want to know, I start at the very beginning. I say, tell me about, you know, what's your date of birth? Where were you born? You know, where did you grow up? What did your parents do for a living? Literally the entire life history, because with asbestos, especially if someone has mesothelioma, it's not just, you know, what that person did with their work history, but what their parents did, because their father or mother could have brought asbestos home with them on their clothes, exposing the children. So we go through that whole history, and then eventually we come to the work history. And so, you know, it's just about listening and making sure that, you know, that I'm thorough, because a lot of times people will just say, oh, that job, they didn't have any asbestos, and say, well, let's slow that, you know, talk to me about that. Tell me about your job duties. What did you do every day? You know, did you see anything that, you know, it's all about making sure that you suss out all the different potential exposures.
And since Vogelzang Law has been hyper-focused on these things, mm-hmm. you know which buildings out the window have been exposed. Not that someone doesn't have something new that you'll have to discover, but someone might say, I worked at blank, and you're going to go, well, guess what? We know someone else that worked at blank and developed this. We've got a case for you. That's often right. Probably how that goes.
Absolutely. We have a lot of repeat job sites. You know, there's some big job sites in the Chicago area, the Northwest Indiana area, that, you know, a lot of times we'll get guys that would go, you know, like I was mentioning before, the trades that go from job site to job site, they would rotate between all the steel mills, all the oil refiners, all the power plants. And then there's the people that, you know, work at those places. So we get cases from the same job site multiple times a year.
Vogelzang Law. I'll tell you what, we got another caller, but sure. We got to hit the news break. Can you hang on a little bit longer for us?
Yeah, of course.
All right, more with Wyatt Berkover of Vogelzang Law, and we'll get to Russ. Oh, Russ's call just dropped. Call back, Russ. We're going to get you after the news here on WGN. And let's give away the phone number, too, here. It is 312-466-1669. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
312-466-1669. I imagine you welcome anyone to call, even if they just have really no idea if they got a case or not. Just start a conversation, right?
Absolutely. Give me a call next week. I'll be there.
Russ is going to start that conversation a little bit earlier here on WGN. Hello, Russ. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling. What's your question for Wyatt?
Well, I worked for a large aluminum company for over 30 years. And I was exposed to asbestos through the 70s, 80s, 90s. Ugh. And safety there was almost non-existent as far as asbestos. And I developed pulmonary fibrosis, which is the scarring of the lung. I don't know. I may, you know, could asbestos be the cause of that?
Yeah, Russ, absolutely. It certainly could be. So if you want to give me a call next week, I'd be happy to walk through everything with you. But yeah, pulmonary fibrosis can certainly be caused by asbestos exposure. And, you know, it sounds like you're pretty confident that there was asbestos around you. And, you know, I definitely believe you. So, you know, if you're saying safety Alta wasn't up to par, then, you know, definitely give me a call next week and we can chat more about it.
And Russ, and I'll give Russ the phone number. We'll make sure Iridian gets you to you too, Russ. But you mentioned, okay. Wait, what was it called? Pulmonary what now?
Fibrosis.
Fibrosis. You said for mesothelioma, you kind of start the clock on the statute of limitations at the day of diagnosis for mesothelioma because asbestos is the only thing we know of that causes it. Mm-hmm. For something like this, does the day of information start today, since this is when he learned?
I'm going to have to give you a lawyerly answer. Yeah. It just depends.
It depends, yeah.
So we'll have to discuss it more with Russ.
But he certainly might have a case. You don't know. We don't know for sure. But
not sure yet, but, you know.
Yeah, it could be. Russ, you get the number here. You want me to say it for you one more time, bud?
One more time, please.
312-466-1669. And Rudy, I wanted you to make sure that you got it with Russ there as well, and that's for everyone else too. All right, Wyatt, memorable case or two that you wanted to point out that you've been working on lately?
Yeah, so last year we had a verdict for $7.4 million for a gentleman. He unfortunately passed away of mesothelioma, but he was a brick mason at one of the steel mills in Indiana. Just a real, you know, man's kind of man, you know, the kind of guy who would come home after work. He'd work a real hard day, and then he would come home, have dinner with his family, be there for his kids. He would go coach his kids' swim classes, you know, on the weekends, or swim teams on the weekends. You know, and he would tell me all the time, he'd say, Wyatt, you know, we live paycheck to paycheck our whole lives. And, you know, the money that is coming in, you know, is unfathomable to them. And I think something that really gave him peace of mind was knowing that his wife and his kids and his grandkids and truly his great grandkids and further were going to be taken care of, because, you know, the work he did in, you know, throughout his working career, but then the work he did in his deposition in the trial to advocate for himself, really, you know, the man was as tough as nails and he showed it the whole time. So,
and he lost so many years of his life. Yeah. I mean, he worked his whole life, and then that's the cruel part about this disease. I mean, one might hear the latency period and go, well, at least you had 20 or 30 years before it developed. But wait, it just waited for you to be retired, essentially.
Exactly. When he should have been enjoying his retirement and enjoying the time with his grandchildren, enjoying the fruits of his labor, it was essentially robbed from him. And you know, the real cruel thing is that the steel companies weren't hurting for money at the time, you know, and they didn't really pay him very well at the time. And so they could have used, you know, alternatives that didn't contain asbestos that were slightly more expensive, but mm-hmm. they chose the ones that were, you know, bottom line profit is, you know, what they care about at the end of the day.
And so they knew it was harmful. You guys contend.
The steel industry knew it was harmful, at least in the 1930s. Absolutely.
I mean, I think everyone can agree that families are due compensation when they have been neglected that far. 815 has a question, and I think this goes to the point that I want to make sure we don't cause panic. If I went to Chicago public schools in the 80s, would I have been exposed to asbestos? Obviously, you can't say for sure about anything, but we all went to schools probably that had asbestos in them, right?
We all did. Yeah, absolutely. I think if you grew up in the Chicago area, the odds of, you know, Chicago really wanted to prevent school fires. And so there was a lot of asbestos in lots of different schools. I think most of the people listening to this were probably walking on asbestos floor tile. There was probably asbestos in the ceiling tile. But that's not to freak anyone out. Everyone's body is different, by the way. I have clients who are heavily exposed to asbestos as insulators, for example, their whole career, and they are perfectly fine. But their wife, who did the laundry, they develop mesothelioma later on.
So. Because of dealing with the clothes.
Dealing with
the
clothes. Yeah, absolutely. And even though the husband's exposures were significantly higher, like I said, everybody's body is different. It handles asbestos differently. And so, you know, there's factors that we don't even know about that, you know, where you are more susceptible to mesothelioma than the person more exposed.
And if you were simply attending the school and not ripping up the walls and the ceiling, you're probably A-okay. Live your absolutely. Life worried that you're going to get... I think I just want to make sure people aren't walking around today being like, oh my gosh, what could happen? Most likely nothing. Just chill out a little
bit. No, I mean, in terms of the school setting, you know, the people that might be exposed would be, you know, the maintenance workers or, you know, people who are coming into the schools to perform work. And you know, 1980s, there wasn't a lot of asbestos abatement in the schools, but in modern day, they've done a lot of work to take asbestos out of schools to alleviate people's fears. But it's every school district. It's not just CPS.
Right.
It's the ones in, you know, the north suburbs, the west suburbs,
everywhere.
The south suburbs.
Exactly. I mean, asbestos was seen as this wonder material that just kept temperatures so low or prevented fire from spreading. I mean, I think it was developed with good intent, of course, and it wasn't until later, but much earlier than some of the workers were told about it, that it was seen to be so harmful. 312-466-1669 is how people can reach you and your team. VogelZangLaw.com. Wyatt, anything else you want to leave our listeners with here today?
No, I mean, other than, you know, we are here to help working people. You know, if you swing a hammer to make your dollar, you know, that's who we are here to represent. We are not the type of firm that we don't sue hospitals. We don't sue doctors. We just sue asbestos companies. So, you know, like I said before, most of our clients are uncomfortable with the idea of bringing a lawsuit. But, you know, at the end of the day, the only way to really make sure that you're able to provide for your family if you have asbestos disease is to bring a lawsuit.
Absolutely. 312-466-1669. Brought up a great point. That is the system we have, right? That's how we remedy these sorts of situations. And I imagine there's a lot of well-meaning people that are like, I don't want to be that lawsuit person. If you're being robbed of time or the quality of life to spend with your family, your loved ones, you deserve compensation. I think everyone can agree with that.
Could not have said it better myself.
Oh, okay. Well, then good. We'll just end it with that. 312-466-1669. Wyatt, good job. Great to chat with you.
Nice meeting you. Thanks so much.